You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, it sure looks like things are heating up after the drone strike against Iranian general and classified terrorist Soleimani.
They absolutely are. And what's most frustrating about that, at least in this country to me, is the rush to judgment from all of the political hacks, all of the politicians, the Democrats, the people like Ocasio-Cortez who, you know, are saying that this is an act of war, when they don't even know what the precipitating factors were to this happening. Certainly, our embassy being attacked was part of it, but there also was apparently some very, very strong information that Soleimani was going to implement an attack against Americans that was a big attack. So before they even find out the facts, they're already, you know, complaining at the president.
Well, you know what? There's so many different things that are bothersome to me, troubling, disconcerting to me about this entire episode. Not the drone strike against Soleimani, because he's been classified as an international terrorist, you know, for, I don't know, maybe 20 years now, and nobody did anything about it. Certainly nobody did anything about it during the Obama administration, and there is word from some sources, both in and outside the Obama administration, that he had been warned on previous occasions when Soleimani's life had been threatened.
Well, so, and it's interesting
my points is that when you as an American don't even know who your enemy is and you stick up for your enemy, I have real problems with that.
Oh, absolutely. But see, they think that Donald Trump is their enemy. So everybody else is not their enemy over Donald Trump. That's what's so ludicrous about this. But Susan Rice was on TV talking about this whole thing, which was ridiculous because she was the one out giving the false story about Benghazi.
Correct. That's the video story that was totally false. And she kept going back on that one Sunday. And I remember that Sunday very well. She hit every single one of the Sunday morning television shows, the news shows, putting out that false narrative that it was a video that caused the Benghazi attack and it wasn't a terrorist attack.
Right. Well, what she says now, although she agrees that Soleimani was a bad guy, she says that the Obama administration never had the opportunity to get him.
Oh, and that doesn't jive with what the intelligence community says at all.
In fact, he was at the White House. Got him while he was at the White House.
No, wait a minute. Okay, no, wait a second. I don't think it was him that was at the White House.
Yes, it was.
I think it was the other guy in the car, the second-in-command guy that was in the car that was at the White House. I don't think Soleimani was at the White House.
I read that Soleimani was standing in front of the
White
House.
Okay, well, that's easily vetted.
Yeah.
But I get your point. And, you know, it was Barack Obama who gave $150 billion to the Iranian government. And then I think it was $1.5 billion in cash, right? Just like you're some drug lord. And they put it on a C-130, a blacked out C-130. And they were delivering all these pallets of money that you couldn't trace internationally, right? They're not bearer bonds or anything like that. You can't trace them internationally. And what do you think that money was used for? It was used to commit terrorist acts and to kill Americans and Europeans.
Well, I was thinking about that money today as well, because, you know, they got just a lot of money for a fairly small country. I mean, Iran is good, you know, it's a good size area of country, but population-wise, I'm not sure. But anyway, they got all that money, and it seems to be gone because they are in dire straits with the sanctions that President Trump has put on them.
Yeah, and also the Europeans. So don't forget, that doesn't go unilaterally. Of course, President Trump is the driving force behind the sanctions because, you know, the UN is so cowardly and the European Union are so cowardly, they can't make up their minds of what they want to do. I mean, they're the very people that have done business with Iran, especially the French, for God's sakes. Don't you remember the nuclear reactors and stuff to, you know, make fissionable uranium? That was all done by the French in concert with, you know, the Iranians, right?
Right. Well, and then the Iraqis, some Iraqis were dancing in the streets about Soleimani being gone, and other ones were very angry, and the Iraqis said that they wanted the U.S. forces to leave, and apparently were not leaving. But that being said, it seems that there's some new cozying up being done in the Middle East. So people like Syria that are, you know, kind of going towards Tehran instead of towards Russia right now, mm-hmm. which is really making the Russians unhappy. So there's a lot of chess playing here in the Middle East right now.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to just talk for just a moment about whether or not, you know, we're leaving Iraq. Of course, that comes up, you know, right away. And then, you know, our Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper, says that the United States have no plans to leave Iraq right now, and we have about 5,000 troops there. So, you know, that's an interesting predicament to be in. I know the Iraqi parliament is supposed to be voting as to whether or not they want the United States to leave, but at the same time, I believe I heard just the other day that even if they vote to have the United States leave Iraq, it's something like not a formal vote, or it doesn't really count, or,
right.
You know, it's something like that. So, I mean, you know, and I've got a question of whether we should stay there. I mean, a lot of people have questions of whether we should stay there or not. And can we project our force without having a sizable force in Iraq against terrorism, against ISIS, against the Revolutionary Guard of Iran? And the thing that gets me about this whole thing between Iraq and Iran, these two countries, I think people forget, these two countries for millennia have been waging war against each other. And I think just about 20 years ago, they had a major war between Iran and Iraq before we went over there, mm-hmm. okay, before Bush got everybody over there. And I think they killed about 2 million guys. I mean, on either side, they killed about 2 million soldiers. So these are two countries that hate each other. But what I find interesting about the whole Soleimani thing is that, to me, him being in the country and him roaming around with, you know, his other terrorist generals and stuff with impunity, right? I mean, just shows me how much power that the country of Iran has in the country of Iraq.
Well, I mean, they have a tremendous amount of power in the Middle East. And right now, I mean, they are definitely hurting with the sanctions, and this is making them angry. But here's the part that I like about all of this. I like that we finally have a president who stands up for America, who, if you are going to attack America, you are going to be retaliated against immediately and harshly. And that is what he's done here, and it's what he's done in the past. And people in the world see this and they know it. So Iran is talking about all these things that they're going to do back to us, but they need to think twice because they know that it's going to come back to them tenfold, and we can certainly do that. And that's what we need in this world, and we did not have that with the last presidents.
Well, with the last presidents, so let's not just pick on Barack Obama.
I said
right.
With an S,
and that's
yeah.
What I caught you saying that, because Bush was sort of a weenie too about that. Now, hey, look, I'm no war hawk, but I do not want countries committing acts of terrorists against Americans, whether it's in our country or abroad. And when they do that, when they attack our ships, when they attack our people, when they make threats that they are going to do acts of terrorism with us internationally and domestically, I am so happy that we have a president of the United States that people know now this guy is not to be trifled with. I wouldn't screw with President Trump. I wouldn't mess with him. You know, when he says we've got 52 areas that are specifically targeted in that country, I would believe that guy, and I would not want to mess with him. And if I was North Korea, I'd be paying a lot of attention to what's going on over here.
Oh, now. I'm sure that they okay. are. You know, I worry a lot for our boys and girls, our men and women that we have in Iraq right now. I really worry for them right now because they can do little individual strikes and kill some of our people, and that would be very distressing. But if they do, it's still going to come back at them. And that's what we've been missing in this country for some time. And we have wussified the United States over time and over administrations. And you know, President Trump is here to tell you that we're back and we're strong and we're not going to let you mess with our country.
Well, you know, some of the, you know, the rhetoric that's out there on the left and with some, you know, more liberal Republicans even is the issue of, well, you know, we need to be de-escalating. We need to be de-escalating. Hey, we have constantly de-escalated. Okay, we've de-escalated to the point, like you said, where nobody had any respect for this country. That whole Iranian nuclear deal was a complete farce that we should have never been involved in. And that's us under the Obama administration attempting to appease Iran. And when they shot our drone down, that was President Trump that decided not to retaliate. I believe what he said at the time was, hey, look, you know, that thing was unmanned. We've got another one that looks just like it, and we're going to throw that up there. But his line in the sand is, you mess with Americans, and we're gonna come gunning for you. And I think that's really what needs to take place. We need to hit them, and I agree with him. Some people talk about proportionality. I don't think that you win wars by proportionality.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You know, you win, you know, strategically, you make your point with a disproportionate response. And by the way, how has appeasement worked so far?
Well, and you know, you say that, and the first thing that came to my mind was the new California law with police officers, basically proportional.
Right, proportional force.
Yeah. I mean, this,
what a joke that is.
It doesn't work there. It doesn't work anywhere.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, Obama had his lines in the sand that just kept shifting.
Well, because he never did anything.
No, he never did anything. That's what I say, that he had a line in the sand, but when they crossed it, he just moved his line back. And this president won't do that. You cross his line, and you are going to be retaliated against, and that is what we need. And I think that the world, because of that, is safer. And these know-nothing politicians like bartender Ocasio-Cortez, who comes in, and the other ones, all the ones in the
Tlaib,
yeah,
and
all the ones
that,
what do they call it?
The squad.
Yeah, the squad. All those people, they just know nothing about this, and they don't have the information that the president had, and that Pompeo had, and that Mike Pence had. They don't have that information. And the president is not going to come to Congress and say, oh, can I strike this guy who's going to be landing in, you know, 10 minutes at this airport? That's not going to happen any more than Obama did it when the opportunity arose to get Osama bin Laden.
Correct. You know, and that's going to be interesting now because of the politics involved in this. And you see former Vice President Joe Biden, you know, going sideways again and actually lying. I'll say it right out in front that he lied, because we already have video of him, you know, when he was asked whether he suggested to President Obama, should you get this guy, meaning Osama bin Laden.
And he said no.
And he said no. So now he's saying, well, yeah, I told him, yes, I said, go get him. And now he's backing it off again and saying, no, I didn't tell him. And so, I mean, how do you believe a guy like that? And the next thing is, you know, how do Democratic contenders for the presidency, how do they answer this question? What's the gal that's been in the military before in...
Tulsi Gabbard?
There you go. You know, they asked her this evening whether, if she was sitting in the White House, if she was the president of the United States, what would she do? And it's just like a typical politician. You ask, you know, a straightforward question. If you were president of the United States, what would you do? She never answered the question. She deflected and redirected back to Trump and started talking about all of Donald Trump's problems and all of his so-called issues and things like that. Look, if you are running for the president of the United States, quit dodging the question. What would you have done if you knew what President Trump knew and you had a limited amount of time to make a command decision? What would you do? Would you have taken this guy out? And when they don't answer the question, that tells me right up front, they're not prepared to be president of the United States.
Absolutely.
And they have no credibility.
And the other question is, since Soleimani is said to be responsible for the deaths of over 600 Americans, how many is too many? At what point would you do something? Would it be 601? Would it be 2,000? Right. At what point are you going to start avenging Americans' deaths?
Well, you know, the other thing is tens of thousands of people from the Middle East, from Syria, from Iraq itself, and from Iran. He's responsible. When they talk about a guy that has blood on his hands, this guy is wading in blood. He's a bad actor. He is, some people put him right up there with Osama bin Laden.
Well, he's
as
evil.
Far as being an evil terrorist. And that's what we do with evil terrorists. We take them out, and we should be taking them all out one by one. And I don't care if they replace them with somebody else. We'll take that person out too. And by the way, those are not acts of war. So, and I think former Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Johnson, was talking about this just yesterday, and he was very articulate and said that the President of the United States has the lawful right to take the act that
Absolutely.
He did, and it was not an act of war.
And
okay?
This is
taking
where
out
you
a
get
terrorist
up.
Is not an act of war. And when President Obama gave the go-ahead to take out Osama bin Laden, you didn't hear the progressive left and the Democrats, you know, complaining about that being an act of war.
No, they were praising him.
Look at the hypocrisy
yes.
of this whole thing. Well, listen, I'm going to take a break and get a cup of coffee.
Okay.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
As we say, let the silent voices be heard. Shadow banning, editing, censorship, blocking, and adherence to political correctness are seen as serious threats to our God-given right to free speech. Suppressing free speech, the very cornerstone of our society, is not in the best interest of our listeners, readers, and those who provide our content. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Well, House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer on the Democratic side, he welcomed lawmakers back to Washington after their holiday recess with a memo and saying that they were going to have a busy 2020. And in that memo, he mentioned that they were going to consider legislation, including chemical regulation measure, some bills focused on the expansion of 5G telecommunication systems, and a congressional review resolution to disapprove the Department of Education Borrower Defense Fund, which I don't even understand what the heck that is. The repayment rule for borrowers. He said in his memo that they are committed to passing legislation on drug reduction costs, drug cost reductions, and some legislation on lowering medical costs and some other things. What didn't he mention?
Well, I don't know. What, the impeachment?
Impeachment. Did not mention impeachment in
his memo. So what do you
think
that means? Okay, soothsayer, what do you think that means?
I have no idea what that means, but I just think it's really, really interesting. So Nancy Pelosi still has not turned over the articles of impeachment that were voted on December 18th to the Senate. Why? Because she wants to control how this is going to go, and that's not going to happen.
Well, no, it's not going to happen. Let me make a speculative comment. Do you think that man's memo did not mention the impeachment because during the Christmas break, they went back to their districts and got an earful from... I mean, I'm being honest here. Do you think they went back to their districts and got an earful from their constituents? Because I'll tell you what I've been seeing before they even went away on their break. You know, sometimes they go away, you know, for like a weekend and go and, you know, give the local constituents a little touch and they do a little town hall meeting. I didn't see any good ones. I saw... even in Nancy Pelosi's district, you know, when down in Burbank, which is Schiff's district.
Area, sure.
Oh my God, those people were taking those guys were taking rocks and bottles almost, you know, from their own people, saying,
yeah,
"Knock all this crap off and let's get back to running this country." Do you think maybe that's what happened?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I could speculate on a lot of different things, but rather than speculate, I like what the Republicans are doing. So there's two different things that could be happening right at this moment. One is that some of the Republicans, like Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri, he joined in with some other Republicans to introduce a resolution that allows the Senate to dismiss the articles of impeachment, or actually, allows them to dismiss it because they haven't been turned over to the Senate.
Okay, well, you know what? Here's what I would think, and again, you know, I'm far from a lawyer, but I sure understand some of these issues when it comes to federal court and superior court, and that is, let's look at it this way for a second. Let's look at it in terms of a civil suit.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
A tort.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so let's just say the Democrats are the plaintiffs in this case, mm-hmm, and President Trump is the defendant in this case. No mm-hmm matter which way, whether it's a criminal trial or a civil mm-hmm trial, he's still the defendant. There's no doubt about that. Okay. But what happens is both sides have opportunities to discuss the complaint of the plaintiff to the judge. Okay. So in other words, they submit their arguments on both sides, and the defense, which would be Trump, would send in a motion for summary judgment.
Yes.
And of course, summary judgment is for the trier of fact, who in this particular case would be John Roberts, the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court. And they would approach Judge Roberts with their arguments on both sides. Now, in order for a trial in a civil suit to move forward in federal court or in state court, they have to have what's referred to as a triable fact. A fact. An objective fact.
Right.
Not an inference. Right?
Right.
Not speculation.
Right.
Not, well, I think, I perceived, I assumed. They have to have an objective triable fact. Now, also, full disclosure, in a civil suit, the judge must look at the arguments in the best light of the plaintiff.
Okay? Right, before, and I'm not sure how this works, Ron, with impeachment.
And neither do I.
But it would be similar. But here's what is also similar, as you said, that in the real world, when a prosecutor brings a case but refuses to try it, the court has the ability and the defendant has the constitutional right to have it dismissed.
Absolutely. And we just did that same thing with one of our friends, and hopefully we'll talk about that in the future.
I can't wait to talk about it.
And by the way, humility aside, I wrote the argument for the district attorney, and the very next day, that case got dismissed.
Well, it should have been dismissed, and we are going to talk about that. But right now, with the impeachment, it's the same type of thing. So Josh Hawley is proposing that dismissal. Okay. Now, the other thing, which is interesting because it's all Republicans and they're all in the Senate, but they have different looks at this. So you also have a different view that says that the Senate could go ahead and start the trial, and they could hear, not from witnesses, but they could hear arguments from both sides, and then if it's deemed that they need witnesses, they could call witnesses. So we have two different schools of thought. One just outright dismiss it, and one go ahead and just start the whole thing without Nancy Pelosi. Now, I am not sure what game she's playing. I do feel, and I always have felt, that she got herself between a rock and a hard place with this. This is not going to serve her well, and it's not serving her party well. And look at the donations that President Trump has received.
Oh, my God. I was going to talk about that, but now you opened the
door.
Sorry,
stole your thunder there.
No, it's okay. But now that you opened up that door, the GOP has just recently revealed that the anti-impeachment donations to President Trump have seen a 300% increase.
I think he got something like $100 million.
Well, I believe that he has right now in his war chest, okay, to run for the presidency, he's got more money than all the Democratic contenders combined. He's got more money than they do, all of them combined. Yeah. Now, you know, I've also heard very recently that Bernie Sanders had started to climb. Elizabeth Warren has sort of moved down a bit.
Bernie has 32 million.
Yeah. And, you got to hand it to old Bernie because for a guy that had a heart attack, 3 months ago? And people were calling him that, put a fork in him, he's done.
Yep.
And I was sort of one of those people. I was saying, man, I don't know if this guy can get through an entire presidential campaign. Because
right.
You know how draining they are, for God's sakes. And these are old fellas. I said, Bernie may not make it through, but, so far he's kind of proven me wrong. And he's also been acquiring a fairly large war chest of his own.
Well, he has. And, he may end up being the candidate. I still say it's the worst group of candidates I have ever seen in my lifetime on the Democratic side. Well, I guess Bloomberg has been rising in the polls slightly, and he's throwing a lot of his own money into the race. So, he's buying a lot of commercials, and those are going up, and so he's rising a little bit. I really don't think he'll be the candidate. There are people that do think he'll be the candidate. What do you think?
I don't know. I think that people have more respect for candidates that go through the political process. And that means, doing the primaries and things like that. I think people kind of resent a billionaire coming in there and just throwing a lot of money around. I think he's going to have to explain how he's handled his own city of New York, which I don't believe, he's handled it when he was the mayor there, that he handled it, very well. I think he'd probably make the argument that crime went down and things like that. No, crime went down when Giuliani was the mayor, and we had, much better police commissioner, than we have now.
Right.
So that's when the crime went down, when they had stop and frisk and everything. And now Bloomberg's come out and he's apologized for stop and frisk, which is ridiculous. And, I think people don't understand what stop and frisk is. I think they just think that police officers go out there and they stop people arbitrarily and they frisk them. And that's not at all what they do. They need to have reasonable suspicion or probable cause, or anything that they do gets tossed out using the exclusionary rule, right? You know, fruits of the poisonous tree, so to speak. So I think people just toss these terms around like stop and frisk, and nobody really knows what they mean.
No, they don't. And, you know, this, nor do a lot of the people that are making the laws about it in the city councils and
that's
everything.
True.
It's very, that's a whole nother conversation that we could spend all night on, because, you know, I have very strong feelings about how they are absolutely just ruining the entire police services in this country.
Well, you know, but going back to what we were talking about, because, you know, I think I pulled this off, you know, off kilter here for a little bit. I'm just kind of interested in knowing who you think the top candidates are right now on the Democratic side.
Boy, As I said, Ron, I don't think anything of any of them, but I think that I just have a feeling that Bernie might hang in there as long as his health holds out. You know, there are those that say that Bloomberg is going to come up. I just see him, to my mind, as a very unlikable person. He just annoys me a lot, and I don't know how other people feel about him. I haven't really talked to anybody about him at all. You know, that I'm going to give myself that project this week, and I'm going to ask around to my Democratic friends, like, who they are thinking about as top. I know that Buttigieg is getting a lot of play. I don't think it's going to be Warren. I don't think it's going to be Gabby or what?
Tulsi Gabbard. I don't think she's in there at all.
Bernie is the only one, or it could be Biden, but Biden, oh gosh, you know, I hope it's Biden. And the reason I hope it's Biden is because I think Trump will walk all over him.
Oh, he absolutely will.
He's
run
got
over him
so
like a
many
train.
Things to say about him.
You know, but here's something that's kind of interesting. Well, first of all, I noticed that when we were talking about this, you didn't mention Elizabeth Warren.
I did. I said it won't be her.
Oh, okay. Then never mind. That's why you discounted her. But okay, so take a look at this. So we've got Biden, and then we've got Bernie Sanders. So look at the conundrum for former President Barack Obama. If Biden doesn't make it, and Bernie Sanders steps up, okay, so if Sanders steps up, do you think that Barack Obama will support a socialist, an avowed socialist, for the candidacy for president of the United States?
I think he'll support anybody against Trump.
Do you really?
I do. I think he'll be quiet.
Trump.
Being quiet is an option.
Okay, I think he'll be quiet, even though I've always said that I have always felt that Barack Obama was a socialist in sheep's clothing. Okay, I've always thought that. The whole thing with him just troubled me.
But that is what crosses my mind when I think, would he support Bernie? I think he would, because I do think he has a lot of that socialist in him.
Do you think he's anybody but Trump? He's an anybody but Trump kind of president?
I absolutely think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I do. I just see Trump being really strong right now, and something major would really have to happen. Here's my hope, Ron, and the thing that I worry about. So many of our politicians are so stupid is the only word that I can think of, and I'm sorry to say that, but they are. And the Republicans could really botch this whole impeachment thing if they open up a can of worms and go to having all kinds of witnesses, because then you just keep this fishing expedition going in a whole bunch of ways, and you just never know who's going to say what. And that really bothers me that they might do that. What I'm seeing right now is I'm not seeing that's going to happen, but I don't have complete trust.
Well, you and I know, and we've told our friends from time to time, you and I have both been to Washington, D.C. on numerous occasions. We've had opportunities to talk with, you know, politicians because of, you know, what we do. And I'll tell you, I don't find a lot of people that are in national politics on a federal level as being particularly intelligent people. You know, I just don't. I think there's a lot of bluster. There's a lot of posturing. But there is, I mean, huge gaps of knowledge.
Huge gaps of knowledge.
Oh, yeah. Jesus. Yeah. You know, when you want to talk about the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, I mean, basic laws in the United States, how things work in the United States, how people at the blue-collar level work and function and what
even the
lifestyles
level.
Are.
Even
oh,
the
my God.
Level.
They have yeah. no clue whatsoever yeah. of what's going on. It's just a lot of bluster, a lot of posturing, a lot of fake stuff that goes out
they
there.
Talk around everything. They don't
ever
answer anything.
No.
And, you know, you and I had lunch with our governor in Texas, and he's just so straightforward. I just love him.
Greg Abbott needs to be a president. You know what? Greg Abbott is just a different kind of man, and in such a positive way, by the way.
Yeah.
He is so darn well informed, and you don't get a political response from him when you ask him a basic question, and he makes you feel welcome.
Yes.
Okay? There's very few people that can do that at that political level, where when they're talking to you, they look you in the eye and they make you feel like you're the only other person in the room but them.
And he listens. He listens to what you say and he answers what you ask. Okay,
exactly. Which
so at the that lunch there were some other
right.
politicians.
Who will go yeah. nameless will not be named.
And
we asked them questions.
And we spoke with them and oh my gosh, it was
the
gobbledygook that came out of their mouth was when you walk away, and neither of us are stupid people, so don't pull that on us because we know that you just didn't say anything, and yeah. what you said is, I have no idea of the answer of what you asked that is my job to know, and that's what's very frustrating to me. Take that to a national level, and it just gets pretty crazy.
No, I agree entirely.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to ResponseToActiveShooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, ResponseToActiveShooter.com, and be safe out there.
Well, Linda, from the the state we love to hate, California, and the San Francisco Bay Area. A couple of really interesting stories coming out of there right now. In the city of San Francisco, which we call the People's Republic of San Francisco, the crime is so out of control that a lieutenant, it's actually a female, who I think is also president of the POA, the Police Officers Association there, has taken on the city government, specifically the brand new prosecutor who was just elected to start 2020, and they are not prosecuting criminals for quality of life crimes. You know, defecation, urination, open drug use, use of syringes, and thefts up to $950 per Proposition 47. Just absolutely incredible.
How do you feel as a citizen living in that city with all those things? I mean, they are allowing these health hazards with the feces and everything on the street. I mean, you don't know what diseases these people have. Hepatitis can be spread that way. Lots of different things can be spread that way. The flesh-eating diseases can be spread that way. This is so unfair to where you grew up. Used to be a beautiful city.
Yeah.
I won't even go there
now. I mean, it's hard for me to believe, living in Texas now, that I was actually born and raised in the city of San Francisco when it was absolutely a gorgeous and fun city to grow up in, especially as a kid. I mean, had so much fun, in Golden Gate Park and going down to the wharf and Strawberry Hill and just going out to the beach and Playland and the Cliff House and all the great places. And of course, my relatives were all involved in the restaurant business in North Beach, which was like Little Italy of San Francisco. And to see the city fall apart right now, and do you know that it has per capita the highest property crime rate in the United States? Absolutely incredible and inexcusable. And I have, ever since the death of Kate Steinle, remember that?
Sure.
Murdered by the illegal alien, who the people of San Francisco on the jury acquitted of murdering that poor woman, and who died in her father's arms. They were walking hand in hand on Pier 39, and he had a stolen gun that was stolen from a federal officer out of his car that he said he found in a garbage can. And he was cracking off rounds and shooting sea lions over there, and then cracked off a round and hit this woman in the back and killed her.
By the way, that a judge just threw out the parents' lawsuit against the city or the federal government or the whatever.
No, it was the city government,
yeah,
right?
That for that gun being stolen out of the car.
Oh, well, that would have been the federal government,
yeah,
the gun being stolen
right
out of the car. But I think they also threw the lawsuit out against the city.
Well,
and
they've thrown everything out
of San
Francisco. These poor people get no relief at all.
No, but anyway, so just terrible. I think even Fox News had a news story on it, and just to see my beautiful city just looking like a third world country. And, you know, I'm glad that you mentioned all those diseases, because I recently wrote a new course for our ETC forensic company online called Responses to Homelessness. And I mentioned all, I have an entire chapter on all these horrible medical, all these diseases like you were talking about, that we haven't seen some of these things like plague and cholera and stuff since the Middle Ages.
Well,
it's
what is
absolutely
the mindset
horrible
of the people of San Francisco that they continue to vote these people in who leave their city in this kind of a mess? I mean, you can't possibly think that you could let your kids run around the city like you could back in the day. Or even, I mean, the last time I walked down the street in the city, I won't do it again.
No, I remember I was with you at the time. And, you know, they were mentioning in this story that, I pointed out the Tenderloin to you. It's never been a good area to live in San Francisco. But apparently now they've got high-rise apartment buildings and condos there that go for like $4,000 a month. But in order to get to your condo or your apartment, you've got to walk through homeless people. You've got to step around needles and feces, and the whole place smells like the inside of a toilet bowl. And it's just terrible. So that's the city. Now let's just go across the San Francisco Bay Bridge to the town of Oakland. And there's a story out of the city of Oakland where three women with small families, small children, have moved in as squatters to a vacant home that was purchased by a property management company for over $500,000. And that's very typical for the San Francisco Bay Area, where the average house is about $1.33 million dollars for just an average house. So they move into this $500,000 house as squatters, and the property management company tried to kick them out, and the police won't do anything. And so they went to court on this, and the judge, whose name is Patrick McKinney, who is a longtime Democrat, a Democrat appointee by Governor Moonbeam Brown at the time, is refusing to kick them out of this house. He says, well, you know, we're going to take a continuance on this so that I can ponder whether these women have a legal right to be in this house.
I mean, it's
incredibly stupid.
The people that are the law-abiding citizens have no rights anymore. All the rights go to the criminal.
And, you know, to make matters worse,
oh, no.
So the women have gone to two city council women, okay, in Oakland, Rebecca Kaplan and Nikki Fortunato Bass, and have got these two city council people to demand that the property management company give the house to the women.
What?
Give them the house.
Why?
Okay, well, because they're poor women and there's income inequality, Linda.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. And I've got another story.
Okay.
Okay, because we're talking about San Francisco, not San Francisco, but California now, as we call it, Calisuela. So the superintendent of schools and the legislature in the state of California have made the ruling that public schools can no longer suspend kids for willful disobedience of a teacher in the classroom. Can't suspend them anymore. Can't kick them out of class
anymore. Well, they can't spank them anymore. And they get in trouble for anything that they do. So how do you discipline kids in school anymore? I don't even know what the rules would be anymore.
Well, just, you know, and I was, you know, reading this story, and there was a middle school teacher that was talking about how horrific this is for her. And she's working in an urban city.
Mm-hmm.
And she's saying, I've got kids that come in with cell phones, and they're talking to people on the cell phone while I'm trying to teach class. And they're playing music, and they got headsets on, and I'm trying to teach a class, and I tell them, take your headsets off, put your phones, turn them off, and put your phones away, and they say, F you, and they continue to do it, and there is nothing I can do about it anymore. Because when I try to kick them out of class, there is literally no staff to come in and remove these kids from my class. As a person that started out as a middle school and a high school teacher, I can't even imagine what it would be like.
I can't imagine it either. And, you know, the thing is, one of the reasons I believe that this happens is because the schools, they don't get paid if the kids aren't there. And I think that they're more interested in the money than the kids. And we just see that everywhere. It's the educational system, in my mind, in this country, has gone to hell in a handbasket. And there are pockets of places in the country that have really good educational systems. But some of them anymore, I mean, if you can't have law and order in the country, you can't have discipline in the schools. I mean, where do we go with this? You cannot allow the inmates to run the asylum.
No, you're exactly right. And, you know, I feel so bad for teachers. But then in some cases, the teachers bring it on themselves. Again, out of the state of California, there's another story where apparently a teacher was teaching a class to first graders, and she was reading a book, and I'm not even going to mention the author's name, but basically it was Tom and Jerry run from the police. All right, so it's a story about teaching kids to run from the police.
Who's the author?
I'm not going to tell you who the author was. Okay?
I need to know.
No, I'll tell you later.
Inquiring minds need to know.
Well, it's an author that's been problematic in the past, and how this book got into that classroom. As a matter of fact, there's an investigation. The teacher has been removed from that class because the kids were coming home and talking to their parents about running from the police, and the parents, God bless them, were saying, who taught you this? Where did you learn this? And the kids were saying, well, she read it in a book, and we were learning about running from the police and why we should run from the police.
Oh, dear.
So could just imagine, these are first graders, and imagine what's going to happen by the time they're high school people. And, I mean, like you said, Linda, sometimes the inmates that are running the asylum are not just the kids, but they're the teachers. And when you don't have a principal or a superintendent of school that clamps down on that type of behavior, because it's all behavior, then the whole damn school district goes to hell in a handbag.
Well, that's why I'm a proponent
suffer.
Of private schools.
But people suffer at the end because they run from the police later, and there's repercussions from that. And what are these people thinking? So anyway, so that's my rumble in the jungle with the state of California right now.
Well, you know, at the beginning of the year, everybody is ready to be health conscious, right? I mean, that's when we all start our diets and break them by 3 days later.
including me. But one of my things was not to procrastinate anymore, but I've sort of put off my diet for a little bit. I killed two birds with one stone.
Yeah, well, I got to say, that's pretty creative of you.
No, I'm going back on the diet.
Well, people, anyway, they're very health conscious. So a lot of people join gyms, right? I mean, this is the biggest time of the year that people join gyms. So in order to attract people, a lot of the major gyms like Planet Fitness, Anytime Fitness, and Gold's Gym have gotten a whole bunch of new tanning beds for their clientele. So the clientele can, you know, they can get fit and tan and,
well, wait a minute, aren't tanning beds bad for you?
Well, and that's my point, is that a wellness thing or is it not a wellness thing? Because it has been proven that if you use tanning beds, that by the age of 35, you have a 75% chance, more chance of getting melanoma.
Isn't that interesting? Because our dermatologist, I had a conversation about tanning beds because of the subject of tanning beds came up, right? Not that I would use a tanning bed because I know they're bad for you. And I was talking with her and I said, aren't tanning beds bad for you? And she said exactly what you said, 75% chance of melanoma once you get about 35 years of age.
And that's a young age.
Yeah.
Yeah, and melanoma travels quickly, and it kind of is like an octopus under your skin, and it goes to different areas. So it's no joke. And Planet Fitness apparently has the most tanning beds, about 5 per gym. So, you know, I'm not so sure that was a good, healthy choice for them.
Well, you know, and then speaking of choices that you think are healthy when you're younger, and one of my things was, because I was a swimmer, played water polo, was a lifeguard for so many years, being out in the sun and you know, having a nice tan body. Well, boy, I'll tell you what, you pay the price for that later on when you get older. And so now, you know, we're walking around with long sleeve shirts and, you know, those special UV, 50 shirts, and, you know, I'm wearing a hat all the time and stuff like that, because you got to protect your skin, because if you don't, I'll tell you what, things get really bad for you.
Well, and you know, just recently I'm not actually sure what they call it. I call it a laser treatment, but I guess it's not a laser treatment. It's a pulse light treatment on your face to even out any spots. And I was really, really shocked at the amount of sun damage that I had that I didn't know that I had. You know,
right, exactly. And me too. And that's where I'm getting, you know, the whole lecture thing from the dermatologist.
I have a story that's going to blow your mind.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. There is a company called Recompose that is the first ever company that is going to basically recycle. I don't know if that's the right word, but they are going to have dead people become compost.
No, Jesus, Linda. I don't want to hear this story.
It's the first ever human composting facility.
Oh, my God. It's like Soylent Green.
Yes. Okay. It's going to be
Remember
opening.
That? Did you see that movie?
I did.
Oh, my God. That was terrible.
Yeah. It's going to be opening in 2021. And it's really interesting. I mean, just really interesting that they're doing this. But, you know, if you've ever seen the Body Farm,
I was just going to mention,
yeah,
I've been to the Body Farm.
The Body Farm is a fascinating place, which if people don't know, they bury people there. You can leave your body to them.
It's for people that do what I do for a living.
And,
all right.
And forensic people can go there and learn all the different stages of decomposition, how to find evidence. And
also etymology.
Etymology,
because you
absolutely.
Study the bugs, right, that are digesting the human beings that are laid out there in plain view. Okay, so they're just decomposing under natural conditions.
Right, but the etymology is interesting because different bugs happen at different points of decomposition.
Exactly.
So that can tell you how long a person has been dead. So it's really, really a useful forensic place. But this place, this Recompose, is a place that is going to decompose people purposely, and they will become part of the soil.
Okay, so are they throwing them in the what's the machine? The weed whacker machine?
Or no,
are they just
no,
like,
no.
What
no,
are they? They're just
they,
leaving them
they,
out there?
No. Well, they have a building.
Okay.
And they do it very respectfully, apparently, because I watch the pictures and I can show them to you. But they take somebody and they basically have a funeral and they put them in a room. And, you know, if you raise the temperature in that room, you're going to decompose faster.
Dude.
So that's what they do.
Well, I've
they're
been in a few of those houses.
They're actually kind of like pods, like you've seen it, literally in science fiction movies, that they put these people in these kind of pods and they decompose. Interesting.
And they're getting volunteers for this?
Well,
or are they just getting the people from the morgue that nobody claims?
Oh no, I'm sure that you could pay. I don't think that they would do this for free. I think that it's obviously a money making type of thing. Anyway, on that note, I think I will wish you a good evening, Dr. Well, Martinelli.
Well, thanks, Linda. I appreciate that. So you know what I'm going to be thinking about tonight. Jeez.
Don't have bad dreams.
All right.